Plans fail for the lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Proverbs 15:22. Hi, I'm Rob West. When it comes to managing money wisely, many of us could use some help, but how do you know you've found the right financial advisor? Today, we'll explore a few key questions you should ask when hiring someone to help with your financial decisions. Sharon Epps is here to help us navigate that process. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Well, Sharon Epps is with us again today. She's president of Kingdom Advisors and a regular contributor here on the program. Sharon, great to have you back.
It's really good to be here.
You know, it may seem overwhelming to find a financial advisor, Sharon, that's a good fit for you. Yet when you're prepared to ask the right questions, the decision becomes much clearer. So you are suggesting that we think in terms of categories of questions. I'd love for you to dive into that.
Well, it won't surprise you. Our first category is values alignment, and we'll cover three categories in total today, but this one is the top because it means that my advisor shares my worldview and can integrate it into his or her counsel, and I can be more confident in the advice they give me. So a key question here is, what role does faith play in your financial advice? Their answer can help determine if the advisor truly integrates biblical truth. The goal is to find someone who doesn't just respect your values, but shares them. There's a big difference between an advisor who's a Christian and one who actively discusses financial decision-making with a biblical lens.
Yeah, that is really helpful, and I would totally agree. That is the first question you want to ask. All right, what's another insightful question someone can ask to better understand values alignment?
Well, ask the advisor their definition of financial success. You want to listen for whether they're looking only for returns or if they're considering how they might encourage your stewardship, generosity, and faithfulness. They should understand that money's a tool and not a goal, and that biblical alignment brings clarity and peace in the planning process.
That's so good. And of course, it's good stewardship to consider performance. So let's shift to competency. Is that another major category?
Absolutely. That's the second one. We want to be sure that our prospective advisor is technically competent, and we want to know that they've got industry designations and experience serving clients like you. So as you ask them about their certification and years of experience, consider a key question like, tell me about clients that you serve who are similar to me and how you've served them. And without naming names, those advisors should be able to share stories of impact with similar clients.
Oh, I love that. This is so helpful. All right, what's the third category?
Well, the third category is process and compensation. The advisor should clearly explain the ways they're compensated. Confidently ask them, hey, I want to be sure I'm clear on the ways you make money because you walk me through the fees and commissions for a client like me. Yeah. Not only are advisors required to disclose this, excellent advisors want to make sure that you really understand. You also want to be clear on their process. So the key question is, what's your process for creating a financial plan? And they should be able to outline a clear step-by-step approach with the timeline and information required and the fees.
Yeah, and I think kind of the overriding theme here is you want an advisor with the heart of a teacher who wants to lead with making sure you're understanding everything, right?
It is, yes.
So if listeners, Sharon, want to find someone who meets these standards and perhaps a few more, where do they go?
Well, we would encourage you to go to faithfi.com and click on Find a Professional. You'll find certified Kingdom advisors who have been vetted for integrity, technical excellence, and their biblical worldview we just talked about. Yeah. You'll also find a downloadable PDF that has some ideas for advisor interview questions. Whether you're getting started or you're actually looking to reevaluate the advisor you have, you can rehire your advisor every year, by the way. It's a great place to begin.
That is so good. Again, faithfi.com. Just click Find a Professional. And Sharon, they'll be able to find CKAs that really cover the gamut in terms of the financial decision-making categories.
Yes, they look at different types of financial professionals as well as those that are located close to you.
Sharon, as you think about and you walk alongside so many of these advisors, what's the big change that they go through as they explore God's word in the CKA training?
Well, the biggest thing is they begin to feel the weight of stewardship, of their responsibility of what God's given them and even what the clients have in helping guide them to make an eternal impact.
It makes all the difference. Folks, find a CKA in your area when you go to faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. And just click Find a Professional at the top of the page. Sharon, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here.
As I said, we're off today, so don't call in. But we've got some great calls lined up in advance. So we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
Fishing was more than a hobby for Peter. It was his livelihood. He knew the sea, the nets, the grind of long nights, but then one day Jesus stepped into his boat and everything changed. After a miraculous catch, Simon Peter was so overwhelmed he fell at Jesus' feet. He was gripped by fear in the presence of holiness. But then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." A daily job was transformed into a divine calling. No longer just casting nets for fish, he would cast the gospel for souls. And even today, you and I, as disciples of Jesus, we've been given that very same calling. You'll grow in your daily walk with Jesus with Anchor Devotional. Try it out at getanchor.com.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. For more than 30 years, they've offered financial wisdom for living well. SMI provides step-by-step guidance for do-it-yourself investors, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Have you discovered the unique spiritual gift God has given you? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress shares how God has specially equipped each believer. You'll learn how to identify your gift, understand its purpose, and use it effectively in God's kingdom. Don't miss this practical teaching on finding your divine purpose this week on Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Our team is not here today, so let me just remind you not to call in, but I will also remind you that we have some great questions that we lined up in advance, so you're not going to want to miss today's broadcast. In the news today, some Americans believe real estate and gold are the best long-term investments, but not all financial advisors agree. Listen to this new Gallup poll. 37% of Americans favor real estate and 23% favor gold, both higher than stocks, which dropped to just 16%. Advisors say this is more about emotional comfort than sound strategy. These assets may feel tangible, but that can also make them illiquid and hard to manage. Of course, historically, stocks are the clear winner. Over 30 years, the S&P 500 has returned more than 10%, 10.29% annually, compared to 8.78% for real estate and 7.38% for gold. Stocks offer built-in diversification where you can spread risk across hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. Advisors recommend that investors still drawn to real estate or gold should consider REITs, that's real estate investment trusts, or ETFs, exchange-traded funds. These provide market access while keeping assets relatively liquid. Gold ETFs can be especially useful because that avoids the security and insurance concerns of storing the physical gold. At the end of the day, wise investing isn't about what feels safe, it's about what's sound. Here's what I would say. First of all, I love real estate. You got to make sure you're ready for a real estate purchase when you're taking physical possession. Being a landlord is something that requires some work. It's not a passive investment by any means. Also, you can have concentration risk. If you have too much of your net worth tied up in one property, it does add to the risk. But that doesn't mean we should not invest in real estate. I like it as long as we're ready for it and we've got the right assets to do it. But for most people, having a properly diversified stock and bond portfolio as the primary investment vehicle, maybe where you're adding some gold, but probably no more than 10%, maybe a 5% physical gold allocation that you might think of as a forever allocation that you're going to just pass down. The other 5%, if you want it, maybe that's where you use the gold ETFs so that you can buy and sell it like a stock and you don't have to worry about taking physical possession. But the bulk of it is in your properly diversified stock and bond exposure with international and domestic stocks and small and large cap, and then some international exposure as well, and then the rest in fixed income or bond type investments, high quality, maybe multiple durations. That really should be the core of your investment strategy, at least from a liquidity and a return standpoint. When we look historically, that's going to serve you the best. And it's a passive investment, so you don't have to put as much time and attention in, although you may want an advisor to actually help you execute on it. So anyway, just some interesting data out that we're seeing in the news today that we thought you might benefit from. All right, let's dive into those phone calls. We're going to begin in Illinois today. Hi, Marie. How can I help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering whether or not my husband and I should spend money in our budget, which we're trying to get figured out what our budget is. My husband recently downloaded the FaithSight app, and
cool.
He's trying to get that figured out and trying to figure out whether or not we should spend money on purchasing life insurance for me. We had some deaths, unexpected deaths in the family, and there was no life insurance to cover funeral expenses. And, of course, there was no will, and so it was quite a mess, and that was 3 years ago. So now that we're through that, we've started reading the splitting heirs and wanting to avoid some of the nightmare messes that those deaths caused afterwards by not being prepared. And so, meanwhile, we don't have enough in emergency savings if something were to unexpectedly happen to me and my grandmother, who is would be an empty nested grandmother, but I'm a custodial grandmother of a special needs child that we've had for 8 years. And as we're looking to plan for, like, what does life look like for that child when they're in middle school right now, what does life look like for them after high school? And as we think about the future, you know, we think about, well, what if something were to happen to me? We would have no way to pay for funeral expenses. Should we spend money in the budget to purchase life insurance to cover funeral expenses or not? Since we don't have much in the way of emergency savings. We had almost 1,000. We keep getting to like that first step of the 1,000, and then there's inevitably a car repair, appliance repair.
Yeah,
some sort of breakdown health. We both, So we've both had health issues too, minor health issues, but enough to like, I'm no longer working. And so I'm just home full time. I'm a homemaking grandma.
All right. So. Yeah, very good. Well, a lot going on here, and I certainly can appreciate this question. Couple of thoughts. Number one is, you know, in terms of if something were to happen to you, I assume that would mean that an additional caregiver would have to come to the table. Is that person a part of the family, or would that be somebody that, you know, would have to be paid where that would add a significant expense?
We don't know. I guess we didn't think that far with so much else to think about. We didn't.
Yeah.
That's
probably the biggest risk here is that, you know, the risk is probably less about the funeral expenses. I mean, you know, that's going to run typically $8,000 to $10,000,
roughly, kind of as a starting point, that your husband would have to, you know, take care of for you. And the question would be, if there's not money there, then you could get a small burial policy. Although, you know, preferably I'd love the money you're going to be spending on that policy, which probably isn't cheap. Although, you could get a very small policy just for that purpose. But with your, you know, age and health concerns, it may be costly. And I'd love for that money to be going to the emergency fund, not, you know, a life insurance policy that's going to get more expensive over time. So I'd probably just dial back expenses and just try to focus on saving as much as you can. The bigger question is, though, what is that plan beyond your life? So something happens to you or your husband or both of you. Do you anticipate that this is, as an adult, he will continue to need, you know, care for the rest of his life?
Well, he is. Yeah, he is very high functioning, which is wonderful, but we do not see him. We're not sure if he'd ever be able to, like, live alone, for example.
Okay. Yeah,
we don't think he would. He would. In fact, yeah, that's part of what also prompted some of this in the planning of, like, there's on top of everything else planning for him is they've told us to start planning for it. And we're like, well, how would, you know, even if we could save some things, how would he currently is eligible for disability. How would those impact his aid in the future? We'd hate to go save all this and then he's ineligible. And then we shot ourselves in the foot.
Well, that's where, there's two tools that could be helpful to you. One is called an ABLE account, A-B-L-E. That stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience. And that's where you could put in, you know, up to $100,000 that could be invested to be used for his care. But it does not affect his eligibility for government assistance. The same would be true for a special needs trust, where you could save a whole lot more than that even. And again, it would not interfere with his ability to qualify for government assistance. So that would be the tools. And how you fund that is ultimately the question. Is that just through your own savings? And do you have a pathway to get there? And what happens if you pass away before you reach whatever that goal is that he would need in that trust? And then is that where we need to look at whole life insurance, which is permanent insurance, that the idea is that you have it for the rest of your life, and it's payable to the special needs trust. So I think that's probably where you need to go. We could recommend an advisor who specializes in these types of things and planning, if that's helpful to you. Would that be something you'd want to?
This sounds like there's so much information, like so overwhelming. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, because
let's do this.
These trusts? How would we fund the account?
Well, if you can't fund it out of your own assets and income, you'd have to fund it out of life insurance, and that can be costly. But at least you'd have some planning that can help you determine what the path forward is. Let's do this. I'm going to have you hold the line. We're going to get you connected with an advisor, and he's a CKA, and he can help you with this planning. So stay on the line.
Hello, I'm Steve Crampton, Assistant General Counsel for the American Family Association. The mission of AFA is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church here and abroad in its task of fulfilling the Great Commission. Our vision is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training in the interest of cultural transformation.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider. And select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
I'll do some stand-up comedy, Abe will do some preaching, Tim will MC the whole thing, and I'm really excited about it. The Weekend with AFA is a chance for our supporters to get better acquainted with the people and ministry you're supporting.
It's a Weekend with AFA, Thursday, October 2nd through Saturday, October 4th in Tupelo, Mississippi. Speakers will include Abraham Hamilton III, Jenna Ellis, Tim Barton, Tim Wildman, and more. Register at afa.net/weekend.
We're grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
AFA is a listener-supported ministry, and one very popular way to help us fulfill the Great Commission is through the AFA Foundation. You may know about things like charitable gift annuities, bequests, trusts, and wills, but even if you don't, AFA Foundation will not only provide in-depth answers to your questions, we'll even help you set everything up so you can leave a legacy that lasts for generations. Get started today at AFAFoundation.net. AFAFoundation.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Just a quick reminder, we're not here today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance. Tulsa, Oklahoma is where we're going next. Violet, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Violet. I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And just what I'm wondering is, so I pay my bills, I save as much as I can. Is it okay for me to want, you know, I get paid every 2 weeks. It's, you know, it's a decent check. I don't make a lot of money. Is it okay for me to spend $10 at Salvation Army to get a new church dress?
I love that question, Violet. And clearly you want to honor the Lord with what he has entrusted to you. And I so appreciate that. And, you know, when we take a step back and we say, okay, what is the purpose of the money that we have? Well, first of all, we have to recognize it doesn't belong to us. It belongs to God. It all belongs to him. We're his manager or steward of whatever passes through our hands. Money is a good gift from God. And part of the role of the money that God entrusts to us, when I look at the counsel of Scripture, is for our enjoyment. We should be able to enjoy what God has given us. Now, there is a seductive element of wealth, and this is where it can get dangerous. Money is not evil. Remember, I said it's a good gift, but it does have an allure. It can compete with our hearts, and we can, just like anything in God's creation, when we worship the creation over the Creator, we have problems. It becomes an idol. And so we constantly need to be checking our hearts. And this is, you know, around a whole host of things in our lives, but certainly this includes money because, as the late Tim Keller said, the pastor and author, the most common counterfeit God is money. Okay. And so you and I need to check our hearts and say, you know, is my heart in the right place with respect to the money, this good gift that God has provided to me? Is it something I'm seeking to try to fill the God-sized hole in my heart that only God can fill when he provides through his son Jesus and our personal relationship with him the abundance and the security and the significance and the identity that we can long for and search for in other ways only to be left unfulfilled and unsatisfied? But if God is your ultimate treasure and you see money as a tool and you're handling it in an orderly way where you have a plan and you're giving every dollar a name and you're trying to save and to give as you're able, and you're not taking on debt to fund a lifestyle you can't afford, as long as you're doing kind of those basic things, I'm not saying you're completely debt-free, but where you're not spending beyond your means and taking on debt to kind of, you know, use purchases to try to fill a place that ultimately only God can fill, then in the context of that, is it okay for you to buy a new church dress? Absolutely. I think God smiles when we use his good gift of money as a tool to buy things that we enjoy. And certainly that's true. We're going to buy something that we can wear to church and feel good about what God has entrusted to us. But it's got to be done with our heart in the right place and with a plan that makes sense. And that's the other piece that I'm hearing is I'm not concerned about the fact that you have debt. I'm more concerned about the fact that, you know, are we moving toward, do you have a plan that works? Are you living within God's provision? Are you making progress on that debt? Do you have something put aside, at least even a little bit, so when the unexpected comes, we're not taking on more debt, we have something to pay it off with? Those are the kinds of pieces that I think you need to solve for. And when all of that is happening, not perfectly, because that's not the way the world works, we live in a fallen world, but when all of that's working, then yes, you should enjoy what God has given you, and that absolutely can include a new church dress. But I've thrown a lot at you there, Violet, so give me your thoughts on all that.
I think a lot of what you said was maybe, yeah, you're right. I think you're right about it. And I'm, you know, the way I completely agree with a lot of things you say. Like, I'm not spending, like, thousands. Like, I want to spend money, a lot of money on clothes, because I like to wear clothes and make me feel good. But I know in my heart, like, that's not good. There's other things I could spend my money on that I could, like, I could buy a sewing machine and create my own dresses, which I actually started doing for work. I started, I started making my own little work aprons, but yeah, I don't think, like, spending money on the wrong things, like drugs or alcohol, wrong, especially in excessive. But I try my best to avoid all of that. If I have to use my credit card for something, then I'll use it. It's not going to be for a dress. It's going to be for gas and food.
Well, very good. Now, listen, we can get ourselves into a little bit of a corner on that, because anything you buy, you could say, well, you know, could I forgo this and do it a different way? You know, should I stop, you know, going to the grocery store because I can, you know, grow all my own food? Well, you could, but you also need to go to work, and you need to have be involved in your church, and you need to have, you know, some friends, and get out and enjoy yourself and exercise. And, you know, so there's trade-offs with everything. So there's nothing wrong with you going out and buying a new dress, especially in the way you're doing it, where you're saying, listen, I'm trying to be cost conscious and do it in a way that fits within my budget or my plan. So don't ever feel guilty about that. I think it's just make sure that you're not doing it for the wrong reasons to try to, you know, accommodate for some, you know, feeling of inadequacy or lack. You know, we find our identity in Jesus, not in the things of this world, not in the temporal. And when we do that, then we're freed up to take God's gift of money and use it, I think, in part, not only to give and invest and to save, but to enjoy. And that's perfectly appropriate. In fact, in my view, it makes God smile when we do that. Now, let's do this. I hear in you that you have some questions around just how do I deal with these student loans, and how do I save for my emergencies, and how do I put a budget together that allows for me to go out and buy some new clothes every now and then, but take care of everything else. So I want to give you a gift. I want to give you a couple of sessions with a certified Christian financial counselor. We're going to pay for it. So you're not going to pay for anything, but they're going to come alongside you to encourage you and pray for you, but also help you set up that plan and give you another perspective on your spending plan. Is that something you'd want to take advantage of?
Oh,
you're so sweet. You're very welcome. Happy to do it. All right. So you stay right there. My team's going to get your information. We're going to get somebody in touch with you, and they're going to help you sort through all of this. And listen, Jesus loves you, and you're doing a great job. So you hang in there. I'm so glad you called today. And if we can help you further in the future, don't hesitate to reach out. God bless you, Violet. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Quick break, and back with more after this. Stay with us.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Since 1994, Timothy Plan has shared good news with investors and advisors by offering faith-honoring mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners Limited and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC. Investing involves risks, including possible loss of principal.
Is our theology of money upside down? Our vision is that all Christians would see God as their ultimate treasure. You know, it's a game changer of an idea, and we start with this idea that God owns everything, and we are his household managers of what he has entrusted to us. So we own nothing, but we have stewardship responsibilities.
Faith and Finance with Rob West, weekdays at 9 a.m. Central or on the AFR app.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Right now, more people than ever are looking for biblical wisdom to navigate their finances, and you can help meet that need. When you become a FaithFi partner, you're equipping believers to trust God, steward His resources well, and live with kingdom purpose. Partners receive early access to our newest resources, our quarterly Faithful Steward magazine, and the pro version of the FaithFi app. Become a FaithFi partner with your gift of $35 a month or $400 a year at faithfi.com/partner.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
Feeling burdened by credit card debt? As faithful stewards, we are called to manage our finances wisely. Christian credit counselors can help with a debt management program that allows you to pay off debt up to 80% faster, while honoring your commitments with integrity. Don't let debt hold you back from the life God has planned for you. Take the first step toward peace and financial freedom today. Visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Well, it's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. By the way, if you've not checked out our website recently, we'd love for you to do that. The wealth of content, articles, podcasts, and videos there to help you be a wise and faithful steward of God's money is incredible. You'll find it all at faithfi.com. You can visit that on your smartphone or on your desktop. Again, faithfi.com. Just click the content button. Also, while you're there, check out the FaithFi app that can help you manage God's money and access all of this great content on the go. Just click the app tab. Again, it's all at faithfi.com. Anne-Marie is in Chicago. Hi, Anne-Marie. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks so very much for taking my call.
Of course.
My question is, I recently lost my job, and I am trying to find ways to cut because I have no income coming in. So to cut while I'm trying to figure life out, I guess. And I have a couple life insurance policy, and I'm trying to find out, that's the only thing left in my budget that I see I could cut, but I'm really hesitant to cut it because the whole purpose of getting the life insurance was so that there would be something for my kids once I pass away. So I'm not sure if it's wise to stop the life insurance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first question is, why do you have it? I mean, you've mentioned one reason, and that is you want to use it for an inheritance. I'm not crazy about that, just because, I mean, your kids, you know, may or may not need this money. They're probably going to, you know, be on their own. They have their jobs, their own income. Will probably have something, whether it's through a home equity or other assets that could be passed on. But I can't imagine that they would want you, especially after losing your job and, you know, trying to cut every possible expense you can just to balance the budget. I can't imagine that they would want you to be taking a portion of what you're trying just to, you know, survive and make ends meet to fund a policy that's ultimately going to pay them out money they may or may not need down the road. Really, the purpose of life insurance is more about replacing income that's lost if you or your husband passes away, and the one that's left, you know, if your husband passes away, when you're left, does that create a financial hardship for you? Because he's working and providing income. If he dies, that income goes away. Are you all of a sudden in a more difficult spot than you're in right now because your primary source of income is gone and you don't have enough in the way of retirement assets and other resources? That's the reason you want life insurance. And I would do that through a term policy, and you'd want to tie the term to his expected retirement, which is the point at which his income is going to go away anyway. And so there's, that risk is gone. But let's get the amount of insurance coverage you need, but just for that period of time that gets you through both of your working years. But to the extent you were to say, no, if he passes away, that doesn't change anything for me in terms of my ability to, you know, fund my lifestyle, and vice versa, if I pass away, it doesn't create a hardship on him, then in my estimation, the life insurance is not necessary. But if you're still saving and one of you passing away would create a hardship for the other one, then you do need life insurance. And then the question is, what's the right policy? And that's where, again, I would go back to, term insurance is going to allow you to get the coverage you need, which at a minimum is probably 10 to 12 times the income you're trying to replace, and do it for as little cost as possible, but only for the term that matches the amount of years you're expecting to continue to work. Does that make sense, Anne-Marie?
It sure does. And I think my biggest hiccup was that, you know, we have two remaining children, and one, I think she's okay. I'm good. She's like 33. She got her own life. Our youngest is 19. It's just embarking on the second year in college.
Yeah.
And I have my this insurance through Primerica, which is pretty hefty.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like you mentioned the term life, I'm thinking, you know, probably, you know, just cancel it. And then if anything, to your point, do a cheaper term life, because the 19-year-old is the one that we're concerned with. You know, if something should happen to both of us, God forbid, yeah, you know, at least this will help her. Because it's really hard. I could save, you know,
yeah,
taking them away and get something cheaper.
I think so. But two things I would add. Number one is Primerica is not known for having the most cost-effective life insurance in the world. So I think you absolutely could probably get more coverage for the same money or the same coverage for less money. Number two, I would make sure that you get that new policy in place before you cancel this one, because even though it's expensive, the last thing I would want to happen is you cancel it and you're planning to go get another one. And in the middle of those two, the Lord calls you home, God forbid. And now your 19-year-old, you know, doesn't have the resources that she needs. So I would just say, get that new policy in place and then cancel the old one. Okay.
Okay, cool. Do you have any recommendations where I could go to get a policy?
You know, you could perhaps ask around at your church or call a CKA in the area and ask for a referral. You could look for, you know, an online life insurance tool. There's a lot of them out there, like, you know, the three best, I think, that NerdWallet recommends is, well, SelectQuote would be one of them that you could use to find, basically to shop around, you know, if you're looking for the lowest cost policy. And so I would probably use SelectQuote would be the one I would look for.
All right. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call today. We appreciate you. Let's go to St. Louis. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. First of all, I just want to thank God for you all. throughout the years, well, throughout some period of time, I've been listening and I've been learning, and I'm just so grateful. So I'm in the process now of getting everything together with my finances and everything now. And I just got over an ailment I had. And so now I know how to heal the human body now through holistic measures. So
let's just make sure we're clear, though. Only God is the healer, right? He's the creator of all of us. But he does give us insight and can use modern medicine to certainly bring about a healing. So, but it's a good point. Hey, how can I help you financially?
Yes, sir. So what I was doing is we're going to actually start a facility, and I was wondering, should I label it under a non-for-profit or should it be for-profit?
Ah, Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I think that, you know, the benefits of the for-profit for a holistic clinic would be that, you know, you can generate profits, you can pay yourself and your staff competitively, and you can reinvest in the business, you can get some easier access to capital, you would control everything, the decision-making authority without any board oversight. You know, the benefit of the nonprofit would be that you'd qualify as a 501c3, and so you could avoid income taxes and allow donors to make tax-deductible contributions. You might be able to access grants and, you know, or even offer lower-cost services. But there is a regulatory burden that comes with that, and, you know, you may not want to give up control, you know, because ultimately the board of directors has to be in control for a nonprofit. So, you know, I think it's ultimately going to come down to you need to define your goals and assess your finances and just look at, you know, whether or not this is something you'd have the ability to fund on your own versus seeking outside, you know, support, which would be available through a nonprofit.
Yes, sir. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. We'll be right back on Faith and Finance. Stay with us.
Let's think about what God has done. I would wager that his top news story is still that the free salvation through the blood of Jesus Christ is available to all. I wager that will be the top news story until that salvation is no longer available. You will have made your decision for eternity. He doesn't ask us to do anything he won't, and then he does above what we can possibly do.
Hear Todd Herman on A Disciple's View, weekdays 12 p.m. Central on AFR.
The term providence means God's superintending care over his creation.
America's Providential History with Stephen McDowell.
God is at work performing his will in history. And so through this podcast, we're going to be taking a look at the providence of God in the history, and in particular in the history of America.
America's Providential History, available now on the podcast page at AFR.net.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Today, put your heart into something that makes an eternal impact. Heart for Lebanon is sharing the gospel and protecting girls from early marriage, child labor, and violence. Your gift of $114 helps reach 3 at-risk girls with hope and a brighter future. Give generously. Text FAITH to 98656. That's FAITH to 98656. Or visit faithfi.com/Lebanon.
I'm grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Sit back and enjoy. We're going to cover a lot of ground here in our final segment. We'll get to as many calls as we can. I know there's a number of them holding, so we'll go right back to the phones to Florida. Hi, Bill. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Yeah, I'm 77 years old. I want to leave my, I'm making up a will. I want to leave my house to my daughter, but I have to have an executor of the will because she's a felon and she can't be an executor, but my brother's going to do it, but she's going to get the house. Now, will she have to pay taxes on that when she sells it? The difference?
No. If she inherits it, you don't want to give it to her before your death, but if she inherits it, then there's a step up in basis. So essentially the value, the market value of the home will be equal to the cost basis as of the date of death. Now, if she were to hold it beyond that point and it continues to appreciate in value, then yeah, there'd be a capital gain. But at least based on the current laws, if she inherits it, that cost basis jumps up from whatever you paid for it to the market value as of the date of your death. And then if she turns around and sells it, there is no tax.
No tax. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, you mentioned you're doing some estate planning here, Bill. Are you going to do a trust or are you just doing a basic will? What are your
basic will.
Okay. Yeah. So she's going to receive everything automatically right at your death. You're not trying to, you know, have it come to her over time. You're comfortable with it coming all at once.
Yeah. After my death.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Yeah. A basic will could do that. And I think you're wise to select the trustee there, or excuse me, in this case, it would be the person that handles the probate, the executor. And I think it sounds like you're going to name your brother for that. So that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, you're not going to have any taxes there. The estate would pay any outstanding obligations that you have, whether it's debts or, you know, anything that's owed. And then whatever's left could pass according to your will, and any assets will enjoy that step up in basis. So no capital gains that have to be paid, by the inheritor after the sale. Bill, thanks for your call today. We appreciate you being on the program. To Chicago. Hi, Tina. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did have an annuity retirement account for the past 8 years, and it was locked in there for the 8 years. Now it's just finished that 8 years, and there's no more surrender charge, and I can move it anywhere I would like to. But it did so well in the past 8 years. So is it wise to leave it there, or is it wise to move it to Fidelity or Vanguard or one of those investment accounts? And what is your suggestion?
Yeah, it's a good question, Tina. You mentioned that it's done well. Tell me a little bit more about that. What was your annual return? Do you know?
It was between 7 and 10.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would agree with you. That did well. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I think that the option is, I mean, I suspect, has the insurance company offered you an option to kind of roll it over into another product?
They did, but
okay. And how did that one look to you?
I just did not trust them because of the way they hooked me up into this 8 years without explaining the pros and the cons.
I can certainly understand that. Well, I think, I mean, yeah, you've got a choice here. So you either go into another insurance product, and, you know, the reason why you do that is because you want to try to protect the downside exposure. So the primary benefit of an annuity product is to grow your money, but while protecting and eliminating the downside risk. The challenge is you do give up some upside on that. And as you said, these are complex contracts that often are misunderstood. There's a lot of fine print, and there are lockup periods. You know, you're going to have surrender charges where if you try to get to the money, you're going to pay some pretty hefty penalties. So I think one option for you is to say, listen, I did well, and I'm going to take this money and roll it out, keep it in a tax-deferred environment, but I'm going to manage it. You know, I'm going to have an advisor manage it in a properly diversified stock and bond portfolio where I have 100% access to the money, and I can still grow it reasonably. Now, there is going to be downside exposure there anytime you're in stocks and bonds. So if we got into a recession, the market was down, could your portfolio be down for a period of time? Absolutely. The idea would be you'd take a long time horizon. And even when we hit retirement, I mean, at 65, we still need to plan for 3 decades, you know, unless the Lord calls us home or he returns. And at that point, it doesn't matter. But so long as we're here, you know, we have the ability to have a long time horizon, even in our retirement season. And given that, you know, if the market was down, you would just kind of wait for it to recover, which historically speaking, it always has. So, you know, I think that would be your other option where you don't have to wait the 8 years and you could still get this money working for you. But if you needed it for any reason, you could get to it. And if you wanted to at least explore that way and you don't have an advisor, what I'd do is send you to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. And then just click find a professional and you could interview 2 or 3 certified Kingdom advisors there in Chicago. There's some great ones, and find one that's the best fit. And then you just roll the money over from the annuity, perhaps to an individual retirement account, which is not a taxable event. And then the advisor could manage it for you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I mean, you know, as far as the safety is concerned in annuity, I did not see any difference because when the market went down a couple of years ago, it did go down.
Oh, okay.
So,
Yeah. Well, they're not all created equal. So I think in this case, you having that trusted advisor that you have a good rapport with, that communicates clearly, you understand how he or she gets paid, and they're, you know, managing this for you, I think you'd enjoy having that type of relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Tina. Thanks for your call today. To Indiana. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is that my husband and I are both retired, and we have like $42,000 in different things. I have my Vanguard. I have a treasury bond. I have savings, and we have Anyway, we have, but for that total, but we have all of those have our beneficiaries, our children, and if we were to both, when the time comes and we're both gone, is seeing them as beneficiary, as a POD, sufficient enough without a will or anything like that?
It is for those accounts you just described, Pam. The question is, what about everything else? And I realize you say, well, you might say, well, there's not a whole lot there. Well, you know, there are personal things and furniture and, you know, keepsakes and all of those things. So the nice thing about a will is you can make plans so that it's not leaving it up to the court who gets what, but you can actually specify where those things are to go. So I think that's why there's still a case for a will, even though most of your assets are in accounts with beneficiaries that have been designated. Does that make sense?
Yes. But only our daughter
doesn't sound like you're convinced.
It's only our daughter's the only one that would have that any interest in any of our other stuff, except possibly liquidating it.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, in that case, I mean, you're right. What you're saying, I think, is that, you know, well, the probate court is basically going to see that she's the only heir and naturally just give it to her, because when you die without a will, you're dying intestate, which just means that it's up to the court to decide who gets what. Now, the beneficiary designations cover the financial account, so I get that, and you're exactly right. But anything else that's left would be up to the court to decide. And so that's where just having a simple will, you know, I think would be a nice option for you, just because that would remove, you know, any lack of clarity. And you could do that, you know, in your case with just a simple online tool, perhaps, if you didn't want to spend the money for an attorney to do it. At least you'd have something in place that the court could use to guide their decision making. But, you know, if it's a fairly simple situation and you're not concerned about it, then, you know, you would essentially die intestate and they would make those decisions, and they would likely come down the same place. It's just you're leaving that to chance as opposed to you being able to specify.
Yeah. Okay. So how does the courts even know that someone should have a designation of a will or something?
Well, once you put a will in place, you would file it with the court in the county in which you live.
Oh.
So they would know that it's there, and then they'd be able to reference that legal document. You would name an executor, and the executor would be the person that takes the will and works with the probate court to settle your estate, which, again, that sounds fancy. It doesn't have to be complicated if it's a fairly simple situation, but at least you would specify who gets what in the will.
Okay. May I ask a separate question?
Just about a minute left, but yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Okay. I am 72, will be 73 next July. The biggest portion of that is in a Vanguard account, and you keep saying, telling people that maybe should put those kind of proceeds into an IRA. Don't you have to have income to have an IRA?
Yes, ma'am, you sure do. So what I've been talking to folks about, at least today on the broadcast, is these funds are already in retirement accounts. So one gentleman had it in a 457 plan. That's the government retirement system. Another had it in a qualified annuity. That's a retirement annuity. So you can roll those into IRAs without any earned income. What you're talking about is new contributions, not already in a retirement account. And in that case, you do have to have earned income to contribute to an IRA. You don't have to have earned income to roll a pre-tax retirement account to an IRA. Does that make sense?
Okay.
All right. Hey, God bless you, Pam. Thanks for calling today. Hey, that's going to do it for us today, folks. Thanks to my team, Devin Patrick, Pat Montague, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And come back and join us tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll be here, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.